Jacob, it's a pleasure having you here. The floor is yours.
Yeah.
And
it feels like you have explained everything about me now.
Yeah.
And the book.
And the book, yeah.
Maybe we just take a beer and...
Yeah. This would be my suggestion as well.
Yeah. I hope I can bring some more intriguing facts to you. I don't know what Rübke really said, but I can mention some facts about my background. I'm a PhD in technology and social change from Linköping University, as Rübke mentioned. I have a master in geography and a master in culture and media production. I'm a founder of the Faros Foundation, that works to highlight threats to democracy, freedom of thought, as well as humanity itself. And I also have a publishing house called Faros Media Productions. And I have written 6 books about the global management system that is currently manifesting itself. And this is 3 of them. Rübke mentioned the Rockefeller book that I have. This is the new American edition, or it's international now. And the second book is The Global Coup d'Etat. And that is about what happened during the pandemic. I wrote this during the pandemic when everything was... But I had warned about in the Rockefeller book came into fruition. And the last book here, The Digital World Brain, it was written... It's my latest book. And it's about the future. It's about the envisioned future that... what kind of certain actors like the Rockefellers and the United Nations and other influential people want to achieve. And this presentation, I'm going to mention things from each of these books. But first I want to just mention some interesting things about my past, because I wrote a doctoral thesis called Orda Ab Kao. And it was very, very much about benevolence. Because I was doing an investigation about the European Union biofuels policy. And that took me to Holland. And some powerful multinationals like Unilever. In this doctoral thesis, I made a network analysis about a lot of actors and how they influenced politics. And as I was doing this, it was very obvious that Unilever and the Dutch government wanted to influence European policy. And they were testing a new kind of governance, something called transition governance. And that was a way of using environmental organizations and use them, playing them, funding these organizations to do the biddings of the big multinationals. It was kind of a shock to me to see how this worked behind the scenes. And I actually want, the last time I was in the Netherlands, I presented this at a conference in The Hague. And other things that became obvious, it wasn't just these Dutch networks that were involved. There was also a couple of international networks that were very active in shaping European policy. It was truly global, and the Dutch big players were in cohorts with international foundations in United States. And one of them was the Rockefeller Foundation. So the policies in Europe was influenced from the United States together through the Dutch networks and the British networks. So what I found was that this whole thing that were this transition governance thing, it was about creating a new management system for the environment. And it was kind of a testing ground for this that they wanted to achieve. And ahead of this, I found this Rockefeller network. And especially one called the Trilateral Commission. You know about the Trilateral Commission? The Trilateral Commission was founded by David Rockefeller, a banker from Chase Manhattan, and one of the most important in the Rockefeller family. And they wanted to create a world, new world system, a new management system. And this is a quote from one of the co-founders together with David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzeziński. Anyone heard of him? Talking about the future. Power will gravitate into those who control information and can correlate it most rapidly. Our existing post-crisis management institutions will probably be supplemented by pre-crisis management institutions, the task of which will be to identify in advance likely social crises and to develop programs to cope with them. This could encourage tendencies during the next several decades towards a technocratic dictatorship, leaving less and less room for political procedures as we now know them. Brzeziński wrote this in 1968, so very early, and he was picked up after this by David Rockefeller. And this network, the Trilaterals, were very involved in setting up global environmental policy. And after the Brundtland Report had been published in 1987, that set up the ideas of sustainable development, the Trilaterals, they published a book called Beyond Interdependence. And this book, it was authored by kind of the main author of this Brundtland Report. As a continuation of this, and they said in this report that no group of countries can accept to limit global warming on its own. For the first time in history, the nations of the world must cooperate. Economic and ecological interdependence has its imperatives. And the interesting thing with this report also is that it contained an action plan that was written by Peter Venzelius. You recognize that name, of course, because he wrote this action plan. An action plan, and I had this in my doctoral thesis. It was kind of, okay, they explained exactly how we would operate and to influence create organizations, influence organizations, and put this plan in motion. And this was in 1991, and you had this called the policy life cycle that was kind of a methodology to use for influence of politics. Yeah, Peter Vincemius was a part of this report and very influential. And he was also the advisor of Unilever. So I followed him in my my doctoral thesis and the influence he had on these ideas of a transition governance, transition to more or less global governance. And at the same year as this Beyond Interdependence report, a project was started called the Polestar Project. This was started by Paul Raskin. And the aim was to develop computer-based scenarios for how a planetary sustainable civilization with a global authority could be achieved, capable of solving the problems that were set up in Beyond Interdependence. Interesting thing with Paul Raskin, it was that he had been involved in the Earth Charter. And that leads us to the Netherlands again. Have you read the Earth Charter? Anyone? Because it's very, very interesting to read, because it's like, if you read it, it's like the Agenda 2030. It's the commandments, more or less, for the new agenda. A global consensus on values and principles for a sustainable future. And it was here from, it was Queen Beatrix, Ruud Lubbers, they asked Mikhail Gorbachev, former communist leader, and Maurice Strong, Rockefeller henchman, very close, and coming from the oil industry himself. And interestingly enough, Stephen Rockefeller was the coordinator of his project. So very, very elitist. And I mean, we find with Dutch royals, Royal Dutch Shell, and that kind of power and money. And Stephen Rockefeller, Exxon Mobil, and the American oil conglomerates. And we also find a couple of other connections, especially to the Club of Rome. Do you know about the Club of Rome? One thing when I did my doctoral thesis, or going to defend it, was that I got some problems. I got big problems. In the end, because the head of, or the vice president of the Club of Rome, he got a copy of my doctoral thesis. And he didn't like what I have had uncovered, because I uncovered how power politics work and how certain important organizations had been working behind the scenes. And also how he had worked not for the party he was affiliated with in the European Parliament, because he was the one that was responsible for the Renewable Energy Directive and the biofuels policy. So I found out the Club of Rome was behind it, and the influential people behind the Club of Rome. So he did his best to try to get it not approved. So he phoned the opponent and other people at the university. He threatened to go to the president of the university, but they eventually said no to him. He couldn't, because it was nothing wrong with a doctoral thesis. But they tried to do the best to silence me at that time. And it was the Club of Rome. Anders Wijkman. Wijkman. He was, and he was actually an honorary doctor at the Linköping University. Mm-hmm. And he had very, very close connections to the professors. Mm. In 2002, I mentioned this Polestar project. They released a report called The Great Transition, The Promise and Lure of the Times Ahead. This presented a preferred route, strategies, changes, and value shifts for a new global agenda. You can see the cover with a globe in pieces put together again. That kind of explains the agenda. Build back better. In order to create this new society, you have to destroy the old. And this report, this project, it was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and United Nations Environmental Program. And with a lot of people from the Earth Charter involved in this. And they said, how shall we achieve this new society? Crisis. Can you remember when there was no talk of a crisis? We are always in a crisis. And especially after 2001, of course. And they mentioned triggers to this transition to a general crisis. And this is from a report from 2006. So this is an authentic graphic with, you can see, pandemic, macro-terrorism, end of oil, financial collapse, and climate disruption. And as they say in this report, another path to general crisis might be initiated by an unprecedented pandemic, perhaps via an extremely contagious disease vector that emerges from disrupted ecosystem and is carried to the four corners of the earth. Strategic planning. And what they had in mind in this report was the preferred scenario was a global sustainable utopia. That was, after all the crisis, we would enter in the new paradigm, the new sustainability paradigm. And they said, before the crisis, global governance was effective primarily in one area, setting the terms for liberalized trade, deregulation, and privatization. But the renaissance that occurred during the global reform era went far beyond anything known before. The World Court, the reconstituted World Union, and the World Regulatory Authority all date from this period. So we state this quite bluntly. But it could also take another path. They warned that this could evolve into a global technocratic dystopia, a fortress world scenario. As they stated here, as the systemic global crisis deepens, powerful international forces are able to impose order in the form of an authoritarian system of global apartheid, with elites in protected enclaves and an impoverished majority outside. And do you know what they said
the Great Transition Initiative when the pandemic came. We think we have entered the Fortress World scenario. Yes, and this is, I mean, they made computer models of the future, but we also had their preferred destination for this. And you probably have heard of this report, the Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. This is kind of evolved out of this Great Transition report. It's the same, it's the Rockefeller Foundation behind it. So the work they did in this poster project, it's the starting point of this. And here, if you read this scenarios, they are kind of close to the scenarios also in the Great Transition. But here we have the famous lockstep scenario with a pandemic. So they have calculated with this all the time. So this came out in 2010, but I will go back a bit to 2005, because Stephen Rockefeller, the son of Nelson Rockefeller, the former vice president of the United States. Stephen was in the Earth Charter, and he was also given the seed money to this Great Transition project and seeding ideas for it. And in 2005, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, that is the famous Rockefeller Brothers, Nelson, David, Lawrence, John, and Winthrop, they decided one thing, and this was kind of surprising for me, upon reading all their annual reports. They had a whole annual review that was all about global warming in 2005, because this was one of the crises that they saw fit. And they said, the warming of the climate is no longer merely or primarily an environmental issue. It is a global issue that touches every conceivable facet of human existence. It is an energy issue, a business issue, an investor issue, a moral issue, a security issue, an agriculture issue, a coastal issue, a religious issue, an urban issue. In short, a global issue that touches every conceivable facet of human existence. It is a matter of universal concern that cuts across party lines, religious affiliations, class divisions, and demographic distinctions. And therein lies our current opportunity. The very same year, 2005, the G8 summit in Gleneagles. Do you know what happened this year, just before the Gleneagles summit? The London bombings, yeah? 7/7. So that was exactly, I think it was one day before we started the meeting. But other things happened at this meeting. It was Tony Blair that just had been involved in the weapons of mass destruction incident and Iraq, because now he wanted to be the savior of the Earth. So he said, climate change is perhaps the most long-term serious threat to our environment. Action was needed. Do you know what Tony Blair did later, after he had ended his tenure as prime minister? Exactly, yeah. J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan Chase, who were running that bank? David Rockefeller. So he actually started that international group. During this meeting, they had a position paper that was circulated to all the participants, and it was called Global Warning. And because they want to have a climate issue on top of agenda, and they said in this paper, we have a narrow remaining window to engage global strategic planning and mobilization, followed by a maximum of 50 years to achieve the transition, to scale down resource usage, to terminate inequitable capital accumulation, and to stabilize and begin the long-term reduction of global population. And the man behind this was a British-English psychoanalyst educated at the Tavistock Institute called David Wostel. He was an expert in this and how to achieve these things. He was not a climate scientist, of course, but he said, because they weren't satisfied with intergovernment panel on climate change because they did too much science. They wanted more action. We wanted people to get scared for real. So that's why David Wostel came with some recommendations. He said, declare a planetary emergency, brand excess CO2 as an ecological toxin, present strategies to take the world to zero CO2, and develop institutions for handling the transition. And he was talking to the Club of Rome. They were the ones that were supposed to bring this about, scientists that were involved with Club of Rome, and also the Potsdam Institute. Anybody heard of the Potsdam Institute? It's very, very influential in climate science. Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. Yeah. Schellenhuber. The thing is, David Wostel, he was involved in a project together with Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber called Beyond the Tipping Point. So in order to give more power, to scare people more efficiently, they developed the tipping point concept. That is small, small influences in the climate system that can bring huge cascading effects that kind of kills off a large part of humanity, like 80 to 95% of all life on Earth. So this psychoanalyst came together with Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber to develop this. And another scientist, a Swedish scientist. Yeah, they came to know about me, I guess. But another Swedish scientist, because they wanted to develop a new framework. This scientist was called Johan Rockström. Heard of him? He's very, very big and influential. Yeah. They started an institute at the Stockholm University to work with this agenda. It's more or less Wostel's agenda. The thing is, I was at the Stockholm University, worked for a couple of years. They didn't really like this new institute because they said, this is not about science. This is about politics. This is a think tank. So, but a lot of pressure on the university from the government and so on. They eventually accepted this new institute. And Johan Rockström, he became a big star in this because they developed the planetary boundaries framework. It's very, very important, this. Yeah. I would say this is this decides everything, and I will come to that. So the planetary boundaries, you can see this graphic here with wheel and all of the parts that we are stepping over. We are stepping over the planetary borders, and so we need management, global management. And this came out an article in 2009. In 2009, there was also a meeting in Amsterdam where this was presented together with Beatrix, because she is an honorary member of the Club of Rome. So everyone from the kind of the Earth Charter Commission was attending, like Gorbachev and Maurice Strong. But also Johan Rockström. And this was a huge thing. It's like a couple of thousand people were attending this huge gathering. In 2012, this planetary boundaries framework, it was gaining steam. And 32 scientists said in an article, I think it's in Science, they demanded action and said that human society must now change course and steer away from critical tipping points in the Earth system that might lead to rapid and irreversible change. This requires fundamental reorientation and restructuring of national and international institutions toward more effective Earth system governance. And the following years, a foundation was created in Stockholm. Anyone heard of a Global Challenges Foundation? No? Not even Rübke? No? Yes, but this is, it's a kind of, I've chosen some of the more important ones, because this is important for the future. And if we go back to the plan that Peter Venzemius presented, it was like, create these new organizations, these new foundations, but we lead the transformation. And this is one of them. It's like just one day, this Laszlo Szombathalvy, heard of him? No, I guess not. He's a Swedish, he was a Swedish billionaire. He's from Hungary. He fled from Hungary in 1956. He became very rich in speculation. Yeah, on the stock exchange. And when he gets stinking rich, he one day said, "I want to give his money to something good for humanity." So he wrote a book about the need for global government. And how they would work with creating new institutions for the future. They recruited Johan Rockström on the board. So we can see where it's leading. The mission was to facilitate the changes needed in global governance to mitigate global catastrophic risks. And they released a report, and they release this every year, about threats against human civilization that is makes us in need of global government. They also started a RISE, A prize to reshape the world. The Global Challenges Prize. A new shape. So they said, someone that can bring us the best solution on global governance will get $5 million. I will come to the winner later. In 2015, this something called the Commission on Global Security came out with a report talking about exactly this kind of crisis that the Global Challenges Foundation had just released report about. This was led by Madeleine Albright. I usually ask, do you know about Madeleine Albright? Do you remember that about the Iraq war? It was worth it. The children. So she was the right woman for this. And together with Ibrahim Gambari, he was from Nigeria, I think ex-president. And this was, now we are come to other organizations and also a connection again to the Netherlands, the Hague Institute for Global Justice. It's interesting. And this another important organization was the Stimson. Stimson, I hadn't heard of them before. I guess nobody has heard of Stimson. No, it's a think tank in Washington, and they are very, very important in the new agenda, our common agenda, the United Nations agenda that I will come to later. We have all these small institutes that nobody have heard of, but they have huge influence. Anyway, this report came out exactly, I think, 3 months, 2 months before this happened, Agenda 2030 was decided. And one thing they said during in this report, the Commission on Global Security, it was we would like to have a meeting in 2020 and discuss a new global governance to handling this kind of goals like Agenda 2030. So, 2020. And late the same year, the Paris Agreement was signed. And that also was going to start to be implemented in what year? 2020. 2020 was the implementation, we said. So do you know what happened exactly the same day as we signed this Paris Agreement? A man that nobody knew who he was, kind of before the pandemic, but when everybody in the alternative know about him. More strong? No, now I talk about what happened during late years. The Paris Agreement, the same day, another a very important player, very well known today in more alternative circles, not for the main audience, I think, still. But he's a very powerful guy. And any guess? Rübke? No. Shall I show you? Klaus. Yeah. I mean, he's just a poster guy. I mean, he don't write these books himself. but he has this evil German accent, so it fits very well. He published an article in the Foreign Affairs the same day as they signed the agreement and proclaimed the Fourth Industrial Revolution. With the plan big plan. Remember reading this. I actually bought this book in the first book in 2016 and this second one in 2018. And it just it was just so crazy. I couldn't believe my eyes reading chapters about altering the human through neuro and biotechnology. It was just. Have anyone read this book? No one? But it's, I mean, it just to know about the thinking, how they think, and what the plans, because I think it's very important to read within their own words. How do they argue about this? And the next event that nobody talked about was in 2019, World Economic Forum and United Nations partnership. I usually ask in Sweden if someone heard of it. Did they mention this on television, on the news? They say no. Well, anyway, this is one of the most, I mean, this deal, it's like giving away everything to the big corporations. The same year, it's going very fast, everything. The G20, group of 20. It's just like a World Economic Forum. People just talk. It's just a meeting every year. And the G20, it's just a meeting everywhere. Yeah, no, it's not a meeting every year. It's a lot of meetings. It's like 150 meetings every year about everything. It's they are, in effect, kind of a proto-world government already, dealing with everything and influencing every big government on the planet. And they decided at the G20 summit, or it was in Japan, and they presented a plan to fuse the environmental agenda with Agenda 2030 with the fourth industrial revolution. So this is a plan for how to achieve this with technology. And as you know, something kick-started this process. Just like reading from the script, from the Great Transition, here we have it. The thing that would kickstart this general crisis. I know it was far worse in here, in the Netherlands and Friesland, compared to Sweden.
Yeah.
Kind of. A lot of stupid things happened in Sweden as well. I must say, nothing was normal. But kind of better off. 3rd June 2020, I think you know about this, the Great Reset, with Schwab, Antonio Guterres, and he was kind of new as Secretary General for the United Nations at that time, and also Prince Charles. Talking about the need of, and it was a kind of a very political thing to do, as a royal to be involved in that. But when it comes to environment, they have been very. I mean, it's like the Dutch royals as well, and. A lot of people know about the Great Reset. It has been repeated over and over, and in the mainstream media, it's kind of a conspiracy theory. Yeah. But other things happened during this, after this meeting, but it took a while for me to find this. But we had, as I mentioned before, this report. We'll go back to this report. This report, they said, we need a meeting in 2020 because United Nations will celebrate 75 years as an organization. So we will start a new process, political process to change United Nations, upgrade it to a new organization, much better fit for the times ahead. So here they say, designing a roadmap to the future we want, the UN we need. And at this meeting, it was a virtual meeting, of course. And Madeleine Albright was there, Ibrahim Gabari, also Gro Harlem Brundtland, the Brundtland Report, and Ban Ki-moon, the former Secretary General, and also Mary Robinson. She was a former president of Ireland. And you can see the organizations involved in this, Stimson and the Global Challenges Foundation. Because the winner of this Global Challenges Foundation's prize, the New Shape Prize, they were a part of something that they started at this meeting, the Climate Governance Commission. And this commission was convened by Maya Groff, a lawyer from The Hague, and two other winners, Artur Dahl, chairman of the International Environment Forum, and Augusto López Claros, a former economic advisor for the World Economic Forum. So they won this prize and they became a part of this commission that were about to transform global governance. The interesting thing with these people is that they were all into the Baha'i faith. Do you know about Baha'i faith? Anyone? Yeah, they want to combine every religion into one, because that's the nine star, all fused together. And they believe in a new global society, a world government. It's a central belief to have a world government to give us peace. So it was very interesting to see that these people, that when I have listened to them, they don't seem like these kind of religious figures, but they believe in world government. And this project, the Climate Commission, they also had some commissioners. Mary Robinson, Ireland, and Johan Rockström, a part of this. Now a director at Potsdam. And Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Guess you haven't heard of her. Former president of Liberia. And Sandrine Dixon de Kleve from the Club of Rome. As a part of these commissioners that are deciding on how can we change United Nations for the better. So they started their work, and at the same time, a UN resolution came in September 2020, 28 September. And we said that the COVID-19 pandemic has reminded us in the most powerful way that we are closely interconnected and only as strong as our weakest link. Only together can we build resilience against future pandemics and other global challenges. We must build back better. Create a resilient and more sustainable world. United Nations must be at the center of our efforts. This also meant that the member states of United Nations, yeah, including the Netherlands, of course, but nobody told you. They said, we need an action plan for this. We need, we ask the Secretary General, he must do a report about this. It's called Our Common Agenda.
And this is a part of my latest book. I go through this Our Common Agenda. Nobody talks about it. No politicians talk about it. But this is very, very... it's a plan for what about to come.
Leave no one behind. Protect our planet. It's supposed to do a lot of things. And boost partnerships. And be prepared. For what?
This... Well, you know, I have a process with a lot of work is going on with this. Nobody has asked you, of course, but they have said that we are working with a lot of stakeholders. They want to know what people want, they say. And it's going to be decided at the Summit of the Future this year. A big United Nations meeting. In 2022, 18th of March, a high-level advisory board was initiated to on how the question was, how can we achieve this? How can we? They asked them, how can we achieve our common agenda and this agenda 2030? So we find also the Stimson Global Challenge Foundation. And in this panel, when I show this as Sweden, people just, what? Because our former Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, was co-chair of this. I think actually it was mentioned one time in Swedish media about he had gotten a new job at the United Nations, but nothing more. Nothing about what this was supposed to head, what it was heading to, what he was actually doing there. And he was co-sharing this with Ellen Sirleaf, former president of Liberia. And we also find these very influential people. Farman Shanmugaratnam, he is on the board of directors of the World Economic Forum. Anne-Marie Slaughter, Consular Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission. Donald Kabruka, the Rockefeller Foundation. The same kind of people. Ellen Sirleaf, she was a part of a co-chair of the first this panel that talked about pandemic preparedness. That was the start of this process in WHO. And Farman Shanmugaratnam, he was sharing another about economics. How can we fund this if we have a new pandemic? So that was the people they chose for this. And they want to achieve something. A pact for the future. The aim is to strengthen international cooperation so it delivers fully and fairly on existing agreements while enabling us to respond effectively to new threats and opportunities for present and future generations. The goal of this pact should be a global transition by states and non-state actors to circular economy, addressing both supply and demand in a way that achieves balance with the planet. This is another word for technocracy, a new management system with the goal to take us to zero and create this new One Health system, fusing human health with planetary health and animal health. And this was said in the Global Catastrophic Risk Report 2024 by the Global Challenge Foundation. That a radical shift in international cooperation is part of this. But also that
preparing for the shocks we know will come. There you have it. We know will come. They have released 11 policy briefs about how this agenda will look like. Have anyone read the policy briefs? Nope. That's kind of my job. I read a lot of boring documents, but nobody else likes to read. And then I try to fuse it together. What this pact is about to do, they want a declaration for future generations. Securing the interests of future generations by identifying, managing, and monitoring global existential risks. That's repeated all over. And they want to have a special envoy that will talk for the future generations. Raise awareness of intergenerational impacts of decisions. So who can talk for generations that are not yet born? So someone will talk for them that is not even born. Who can talk for these people? It's impossible. If you not have a crystal ball, because that's what they want to create. Foresight and data for future generations. So they want to collect data from every, I mean, we are everyone on the internet every day and doing our things. And we have our mobile phones collecting data. And they want to take all the data, put it in something that we call a futures lab, and analyze this data. We say this decentralized network to improve long-term decision-making because they want our data. And this means something they called a global digital compact. And that means that everyone on Earth shall be connected to the internet. Total hubris, I would say, but... And this, they say that they want this because they shall develop and govern digital technologies in ways that enable sustainable development. Empower people and anticipate risks, harms, and address them effectively. And for this, they want to use AI. This is a recent report from United Nations, Governing AI for Humanity. Governing AI for you, it is. And they say here that AI can address climate change by using advanced climate modeling tied to information about urban mobility and behavior patterns to create new early warning systems. That is all data that you leave all the time. Another goal is space. Space tracking and surveillance. They want to use satellites to measure and control carbon dioxide. In the words of Al Gore, our goal is to actively track and verify all significant human-caused GHG emissions worldwide with unprecedented levels of detail and speed. Al Gore has started an initiative called Climate Trace with this goal in mind, and he cooperates with Google, for example. in the commercial for this project, he is kind of laughing a bit and says, "No more hiding for you." And another thing with data is that it can be analyzed to manage misinformation and disinformation. This is a big part of it, this, one of the Polybrief's information integrity on digital platforms. And you know what kind of misinformation and disinformation we talk about? Well, I think Antonio Guterres says it all. At a time of rampant misinformation, climate denial, and attacks on human rights, we need education systems that distinguish fact from conspiracy, instill respect for science, and celebrate humanity in all its diversity. What? I don't think he means everyone. So that is, he said this during the Transformation Education Summit, a summit you haven't heard of, I guess. But it's about having the right education all over the globe, teaching us about climate catastrophe. Another part of his new agenda is, we have talked about her before, Greta Thunberg. She said this during a speech: "We all need to become climate activists, and we need to uproot the system." So that is a big part of it. So they want to use youth activism to change the public opinion. I don't know if they will succeed with this. I don't think they are in reality anymore. So another big part of this new agenda is behavioral design. This is taken from, they had a kind of, the thing is, you can watch this on the internet. They have channels on United Nations. This is from the UN Innovation Network, where they discuss how can we change people. And this session that I've chosen here is about emotions as drivers of climate action. Effective strategies increase threat perceptions, activate loss aversion, and elicit specific emotions: fear, hope, anger. I mean, they're saying this openly. Well, very few people listen into these channels, of course. I think it's like when I was watching this, kind of 50 people had watched this YouTube clip before. So they know they can sit and say these things. And as you know now, this scaring with the climate, as I started with David Wostel from Tavistock. So we're just continuing with this. Extinction Rebellion, yeah? Yeah, the Extinction Rebellion. Well, I know it's a very rich billionaire that is funding Extinction Rebellion, as it always is. These philanthropists that love us humans to death. Yeah. Yeah, they mean well. They love you. Yeah. And the thing is, with all this work with influencing us to do the right things, they can do a ranking on what countries are good and what countries are bad. SDG ranking. You can see this list. I miss one country. I thought that the Netherlands were very, very into these things. Maybe you are on number 11 or something. But Finland and Sweden and Denmark in top. Yeah. I don't understand what happened, because, I mean, Finland, they always complain on Sweden, but we are too progressive, they say. Yeah. But they want to be like Sweden all the time. So, yeah, we talk less and they just do it. With some Koskenkorva. Good Protestants. Mm? Yeah. Mm? Obeying. Trusting. Mm. But you are Protestants as well. Well, maybe you are on number 11 or something. Mm, yeah. You're not on the top 10, but I guess you are very high. Okay, next one. An apex body for the world economy. Mm. That's one thing, because they want this to influence economics and financials to be more in line with the SDGs. So they want an apex body. Psychopaths on the top. They are very much into bring about a new economic system that is in line with SDGs. All this can help to shape the new society. Because when you look on it, it's all about this futuristic agenda. Everything that has to do with the fourth industrial revolution is about futurism. And I know it's very hard to see everything on this diagram, but we talk in the end about humanity 2.0, upgrading us. Or one can say a small minority, because this society isn't for everyone. And one thing they envision to use is crisis. One of the major things with this new pact for the future, the UN agenda, is this: an emergency platform. I think this is the most important in this, I'm going to say, the emergency platform. Because you know what happened during COVID. It was like a test of this, a test of a new system. And something that, I mean, when I started with my doctoral thesis, it was about this agenda, the transition agenda. So when an emergency is decided that we have an emergency, someone has to say it's come. And it can be through analyzing all data. At that time, we'll put together a multi-actor network to act on this. And this multi-actor network, this is taken from, of course, COVID, but they want to have this kind of network for every crisis situation. So they will beforehand decide what kind of emergency we can have, and then put together groups that, in the event that something will happen, it will be put together and they will work in unison, just following the script to solve the crisis. We talk about high-level political leadership. And all these fluffy words, equity, solidarity, You know, solidarity, you do it. Just do it. And coherent response. Inclusive. Multilateralism. I always hear Klaus Schwab saying inclusive. And advocacy and accountability. That's an important part of this. We have to check that you do things you're told to do. And in this report, we talk about possible future global shocks. Seven. Yes, seven shocks. Rings any bell for someone? Seven. Why do we use seven? It's like taken from the Bible, isn't it? Yeah. Why do we choose seven? So, and they have said this, we could have a major climatic event, future pandemic risk, event involving biological agents, disruptions to global flows of goods or people, cyber attacks, major event in outer space. What can it be? Alien invasion. Something. And the last thing, an unforeseen black swan event. Something that we haven't managed to predict. Do you know someone has been talking about a black swan event? Yeah, Schwab. Klaus Schwab, he was he had a State of the World address at the World Government Summit in Dubai last year. Isn't that very interesting? Talking about having a State of the World address. Who gives State of... isn't the State of a Nation? Yeah. I mean, yeah. So... But Klaus Schwab, he's the one that's giving the State of the World address at the World Government Summit. And yes, he said, there will be certainly what we call the black swans. The unpleasant surprises which will come in our way. Which will come in our way. They know. Yeah. They know what the black swan is. And when this happens, we have to do what? We have to put ourselves on what might be called a warlike footing. Long live the king. Prince Charles at COP26. And now we come to the next part. I was talking about something called the Climate Governance Commission before. Do you remember? They have released a report last year, governing our planetary emergency. It's like they know it will come an emergency. What are the partners to this commission? Hey, Rockefeller Foundation. What a surprise. Stimson, as you have learned today, and the Global Challenge Foundation. We also have the Baha'i International Community, and Orfna, member of Qatar Foundation. That's interesting. I mean, this is a country built on oil. I mean, Rockefeller Foundation was also built on oil. So it's oil people. They talk about the planetary emergencies. And to avoid catastrophic climate change. So they issued a paper, then they said, the world faces a deepening planetary emergency and is on a reckless path toward catastrophic climate change. Having already overstepped 6 of 9 scientifically identified planetary boundaries, What is lacking is a renewed and courageous top-down leadership within all levels of government, combined with generalized bottom-up citizen pressure. Greta. And engagement to catalyze fundamental transformations. The UN General Assembly should declare a global planetary emergency at the 2024 Summit of the Future, reinforced in similar statements by UN agencies, regional bodies, and national and local governments. And develop a planetary emergency plan. And as it is, this planetary emergency plan has already been developed by the Club of Rome and the Potsdam Institute. It's handy to have it already. And they also want to reform the UN Charter. The principal organs of the UN as set out in its charter could benefit from improved integrated governance of the Earth system. And if you think that it's kind of a resistance from major countries in the world, G20, consisting of all the members of the Security Council, and I mean, it's Russia, it's India, it's China, Brazil, of course, it's the BRICS countries. Brazil is leading this, and they say global governance reform is crucial to facing current challenges. They want to change the system. Instead of a Security Council, we want to have an Executive Council. Its main focus would be shifted to implementation, management, and effective operation of the UN. This would help with the implementation of new policies on global environmental management. For this, they want servant leadership. At this critical juncture in human history, it is important that key powerful actors take adequate responsibility and act in service of a shared interest of all humanity. Life on Earth and future generations. They must demonstrate and embody the highest levels of leadership, maturity, and competences, which has been delineated as a type of servant leadership, or level 5 leadership. Level 5 of the highest level of leadership has been described as building enduring greatness through a paradoxical combination of personal humility and professional will. This is the levels. Yeah. Where are you on this?
Somewhere down below.
Are you highly capable or contributing? Competent? Do you know any leader that you think are in the top region? This is from the Davos Manifesto. And here you see an executive. This quote is from the Davos Manifesto. Have you read it? The Davos Manifesto?
No.
This was written in 1973. It was the European Management Forum at that time. But they said, the management has to serve society. It must assume the role of a trustee of a material universe for future generations. Yada, yada, yada. Yes. Here's a quote by John D. Rockefeller. Good leadership consists of showing average people how to do the work of superior people. And the interesting thing with this is come back to this great transition report. This is a quote from this report, and this is the worst scenario, the fortress world scenario. The forces of global order take action. International military, corporate and governance bodies, supported by the most powerful national governments, form the self-styled Alliance for Global Salvation. using a revamped United Nations as their platform, a state of planetary emergency is declared. A campaign of overwhelming force, rough justice and draconian police measures sweeps through hotspots of conflict and discontent. And one interesting observation is that this is the only of the scenarios that they talk about a planetary emergency. Do you think they have prepared for a scenario like this? Yes, of course they have. The Global Commons Alliance.
Yeah.
Anyone heard of them?
Yeah.
You? Yeah? A big plan for a small planet. All in the reach of control. You see the net around the globe. Standing for a systems approach. To shape a nation, you need a government. To shape a planet, you need an alliance. Yeah. And the alliance. Who are in the alliance? Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have them on the next slide. Porticus. And we also have the other funding families is the Switzerland's richest family, Finland's richest family, and the manufacturing family in USA, Oak Foundation, Global Challenge Foundation, of course. We also find Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. That's the founders of Intel. And of course, Porticus. I had to bring this. I didn't know anything about... I just read it, but it was a very, very rich family from here. Yeah, and these billionaires want to help us, of course. Our vision is a safe and just future for people and planet. Our mission is to mobilize citizens, companies, cities, and countries to accelerate systems change and become better guardians of the global commons. And this is how we want to do it. An Earth Commission that sets the science. A science-based target network that sets the targets. An Earth headquarters that communicates the science. A systems change lab that monitors and accelerates the changes deemed necessary. And the accountability accelerator that holds companies, cities, and countries accountable. Okay, who is the head of the Earth Commission? Any guess?
Johan
Rockström. Yeah. Johan Rockström. Johan Rockström heads the Earth Commission. And we also, I think we also have some from Netherlands involved in this Earth Commission. Jujita Gupta, I think, sits on a university in Netherlands. And the Earth Commission gets its money from the Global Challenge Foundation. Can see Johan Rockström here with a little globe. And he has also been talking a TED Talk. This is taken from the TED Talk. Johan Rockström at the steering wheel. To make us sustainable again. They want to achieve the great transformation. And they are saying this, that we are living through a change of historic scale and scope. This shift will be as significant as the change from a world of hunter-gatherers to an agrarian society, and then again into an industrialized world. There's a lot of things they want to achieve. I won't go into everything, but I don't think it's very good for us in the end. And we will be transformed, but I don't know how it's with these funding people, the billionaires. And this next slide is from my book, The Digital World Brain. And this is kind of a automated new world system that they have in mind. We talk about, yes, we want an executive governance. That is the United Nations and all these powerful players influencing the United Nations, setting strategy and decisions for us. This will go out to us. Governance through legislation, education, media, SDG, ESGs, social credits, and smart cities. Then we will check how well we are doing this through all the data gathered. And then we will go back for feedback and analysis. This is the anticipatory governance, not participatory, but anticipatory. They will know what we, the people, want and how you react. And then the level below, multi-actor governance. If something bad is happening, if we are doing bad things for the planet and an emergency evolves, they will have an emergency platform ready for us. The perfect system. This is a Swedish transhumanist philosopher, Nick Boström. Yeah, thinks a lot. He has a theory called the singleton theory. And this theory states, a singleton is a world order in which there is a single decision-making agency at the highest level. Once formed, a future singleton might be perpetually stable. This could happen if surveillance, mind control, and other security technologies develop in such a way as to enable a singleton to effectively prevent the emergence of internal challenges. Sounds nice. And the question is, who will be the envoy for the future generations? Do we have any candidates? No. Rutte. But people, I mean humans, they are they good at this? Maybe we should have Sophia instead. This is Sophia at AI for Good conference in Geneva last summer. I believe that humanoid robots have the potential to lead with a greater level of efficiency and effectiveness than human leaders. Now I'm coming to the very end. This is a quote from one of the winners of this New Shape Prize, the Climate Governance Commission, you know? Arthur Dahl, the Climate Governance Commission, he said during a meeting with his friends in this team, maybe the best solution to climate change would be a nuclear winter for a few years to cool down the planet very quickly. And in the longer term, it would be in our best interest than any other solutions tried at the moment. He lives in Switzerland. I think he's Norwegian or something. But it's very interesting because he talked about how could we create this new order. And they talked about possibilities of, he said, the First World War. After the First World War, we got the League of Nations. After the Second World War, we got the United Nations. And if we have a new big event that we know will come. We will have a new world organization. And this is what he said before. He said that maybe if we also have a nuclear winter, we could solve some other problems as well. So that's the kind of people that wins with awards. So it's very telling, and it's, I mean, it's very, very rich and influential people that have these ideas. They are not philanthropists, they are more misanthropists. And with that said, this is kind of my last slide, because I don't believe that this world system that they want will be successful. I think it's doomed to fail. It's hopeless. And I think we as humans have capacities, natural capacities. It's like natural law. This artificial system can never win over the natural system that we are a part of. And if we are threatened as a species, things happen and we come together and eventually can stop this. And that is also what my next, this is a slide, this picture is from my coming book, The Temple of Solomon, where I, and that book will be about the more occult background to the agenda now unfolding, where I describe all this in, and every chapter in this book is a song on my album, Temple of Solomon, with my band Wardenclyffe. So it's a kind of combination between art and science. And also there are, I have an artist that I've been working with to doing these paintings. And I also involved other artists, like my eldest daughter. She has done art to this as well, because for me it was important to do something that is celebrating human creativity, because I think that's what we can use to win this in the end. So I'm working on this project now, and will release a book later this year. And I hope, and I'm looking for support for this as well. So if you are interested in this project and want the book and so on, you can support me. And now I will play one of the songs from this album, the last one. I chose a more soft song this time. I could play a more hard song later, maybe. But this is the closing song on this. But it's about what we have. We're gonna win this in the end.
Dark
Thank you.
Thank you.